You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
You may remember the news reports about Robert Durst, the son of a powerful real estate tycoon whose wife Kathleen disappeared without a trace in 1982. And then 18 years later, his longtime friend Susan Berman was mysteriously murdered. And a year after that, he was arrested and tried in Texas for killing and dismembering a neighbor. That series of events were the inspiration for a new film called All Good Things, which opens this Friday at the Paris Theater and the Angelica. It stars Ryan Gosling, Frank Langella, and Kirsten Dunst, and was directed by Andrew Jarecki. I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Jarecki back to our show, and Kirsten Dunst, who plays the disappeared wife. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Andrew, it's been described as being loosely based on the real-life experiences of Robert Durst. How loosely?
I don't know. I don't think I ever described it as loosely, but, you know, I think whenever you're doing a narrative film about a story that's true, there's always a sense that, you know, you weren't there at the time, and so you're creating dialogue. But in this film, because we researched it very methodically, the scenes and the moments in the film are things that came from real life.
Well, your first film, Capturing the Friedmans, was a documentary. Did you welcome a chance to get away from having to stick exactly to the facts? You could invent things here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge opportunity to be able to sort of speculate a little bit, and certainly in a case like this, which has been unsolved and misunderstood over the years, I think it's an opportunity to work with actors who are as unique as Kirsten, because they bring this whole other dimension to it.
Well, wasn't there a time when you were planning to stick as close to the historical facts and use the real names?
Well, we always used the real names up until maybe a few weeks before we started shooting the movie, and we didn't change them because we thought there was liability or for legal reasons, although later on the Durst Organization did threaten us a lot. So
we'll talk about that later.
You know, had that happened before, maybe it would have been a concern, but I don't think we ever were worried about that. We just thought as we got closer to making the film and we got through this pretty extensive rehearsal period, Ryan and Kirsten and I would talk about, are we trying to imitate the original people, or are we just trying to build characters here that are real people?
Well, Kirsten, you played real people in the past, mm-hmm. Marie Antoinette, for example. But what happens with something like this? Do you do any research?
You know, I met Kathy's brother and talked to him about her, but it's not like someone who's known in the public eye or that you can see video of. So it was really just creating a real relationship between these two people and not making her a victim, even though, you know, she struggles a lot in the film with Ryan's character.
Well, you make us like her a lot, even though she's a troubled person at times. Robert Durst, in one of the weirdest articles I've ever read, was quoted in the New York Times as saying that you were pretty much a ringer for his wife, Kathy. Most people would have been upset to watch a movie that suggested that they'd murdered their wives, but he said, parts made me cry.
Yeah. I don't know how to take that.
I mean,
it's a compliment, but really twisted source.
I mean, strangely, from the very beginning, we knew that Kirsten's character and the girl that she is based on would be very sympathetic to the audience, because she's this kind of amazing girl from this very modest background in Long Island, and she marries into this, you know, enormous real estate family in New York, and that all is part of what makes us love her. At the same time, I think it's important for us to be able to understand both characters here, not to paint one person as sort of the, you know, a one-dimensional evil character or another person as a one-dimensional good character. And so I did say at the very beginning of this, if we can make a movie that Robert Durst can sit and watch and have an emotional reaction to, then I think we've crossed a certain other kind of bar. And so I was kind of amazed to read that. I was really happy to read that.
Kirsten, you said that you think it's the best work you've ever done. You've made 40 how many films?
Yeah, a lot. I've lost track now.
It's something in the mid-40s. But is it because this role allowed you to show a more complete acting range?
I think for me, that wasn't exactly what I said, because I think that it's up to other people to discover your performance and what they think. But for me personally, it meant a lot. It was at a good time in my life, and it felt like I had the opportunity to show a lot of things that I wasn't able to in other films and have a range and play so many things, which is, you know, feels like a real woman to you instead of this, you know, just this pretty girl that gets, you know, lost and then killed or whatever. You don't really get the opportunity to flesh out roles all the time, especially, you know, when you're just entering the realm of like adult roles. And so,
but
it
you're
was a real
in your, you're already in your mid 20s. Have you been playing roles younger than you on the whole?
No, I wouldn't say that, but I would say that there aren't that many opportunities.
You once said that romantic comedy may be the toughest genre to pull up. This is definitely not a romantic comedy. Have you changed your mind about that?
God, I don't remember that quote.
You know, this is a big problem. This is a big problem when you leave a paper trail. And, and we
it's
all
funny.
Do.
I'm sure I did say that before.
Well, I'm sure you were in a romantic comedy at the time, and you were defending the film.
Yeah, I probably was, and also, I mean, it is. Because it's been done so well. I mean, you can't. Where's the Harry Met Sally's? Like, what happened to the romantic comedy? The English are they really the only people that have pulled it off? Notting Hill and there hasn't been a. I can't think of a good American comedy, a romantic comedy.
And it is weird because there was a time in the 30s and the 40s when there were so many, and they were really funny.
But some of the great classic were. Sorry,
is it we don't have writers on that level anymore? Are they all working on television or doing stand up?
I think that just things get passed by really. I just don't think that it matters as much in certain cases. I mean, they stick to a formula that works, and then when they keep reproducing it, it eventually burns out on itself.
And when all else fails, you have an explosion or a car chase.
You know, when we were first talking about Kirsten, I guess when we were first developing the script, we had always talked about Kirsten because there was this necessity for us to have a person in that role who maybe, yes, you were going to have an actor who was going to need to be sort of glamorous, and that's sort of what actors are like. But at the same time, we needed somebody who was really a person. And, mm-hmm. and it's hard. If you think about the female actors that are out there, you know, you get a lot of triviality. You get a lot of people who feel like they've been sort of reconstructed, even if they're very young. They feel like all the rough edges have been polished off. And there's something, you know, very human about Kirsten. I think it's just, you know, she very much is who you think she is. She's a very natural person. And we always felt that way. And then, you know, when we started to talk about it more seriously with her, it was so obvious that there was a natural connection to that. And I think, you know, a lot of the time people are afraid to make films that are going to require people to go through this kind of transition. You know, there aren't a lot of actors that can do it, and then you do it badly, and then you wish you had made something, you know, simpler.
My guests are Andrew Jarecki, the director of a new film called All Good Things, which opens this Friday at the Paris Theater in the Angelica. With me also is Kirsten Dunst, one of the stars, along with Ryan Gosling, Frank Langella, Lily Rabe, Philip Baker Hall, Nick Offerman, and Kristen Wiig. Robert Durst said in that article in the Times, the movie is as reasonably accurate as anything out there, a whole lot more accurate than those endless TV documentaries. I guess he's watched all of them. This doesn't pretend to be a documentary. But you did, as I understand it, shoot hundreds of hours of footage of real people associated with the true story.
Well, you know, we came at this from the perspective of having done documentaries before. And as we started to look into the story, it turned out that it was as complicated as the story in Capturing the Freedmans or the story in any really great true story. And so we started out by reading all the articles and things that had been published. And most of that stuff was pretty awful. Most of it was very one-dimensional and just decided who were the good characters and who were the bad characters. And also Robert Durst did a number of things in his life later on that were very, you know, easily picked up in the media because some of the choices that he made, you know, dressing as a woman in Galveston, Texas, being
a
mute woman. You know, but this is a man who has a logic. You know, when you listen to him in his testimony on the witness stand in Galveston, we had found a sort of rare copy of a transcript of this testimony. He really talks about his life and spends about 2 days doing it. And there's logic to everything that he does. And so, you know, we started out going to real people who had been friendly with this couple, police who had investigated these various cases, talking to the district attorney who reopened the case against him, and an enormous number of sources like that. And then while we were developing the script from the stories and things that we had learned, people in Hollywood would say to us, you know, you don't have to do all that work. You know, it's taking a lot of time. You know, you don't understand the way it works. What you really do is you just go and buy an article, and then that's your research, and then that's your story, and you go and make a movie about it. You know, the audience won't know the difference. It's okay. You just don't have to do all that work. But, you know, I think the audience does know the difference. You know?
Well, this is a wild story. As you point out, it does sound stranger than fiction. You have this man who whose wife disappears. He's from a very powerful real estate family. He lives in Texas posing as Dorothy, a mute woman in a blonde wig. And then there's the whole gruesome matter of his cutting up his neighbor Morris Black's body with a hacksaw and throwing it into the Galveston Bay.
There's that.
That's...
And there's also the murder of his friend.
Yeah.
Which he may or may not have been connected to.
Yeah.
Well, he does object to the fact that you suggest that he's connected to both the disappearance of his wife, who may very well have been dismembered and thrown into the Atlantic Ocean or something, and the murder of his friend.
Well, you know, there's endless speculation about these stories, and that's why it was such an interesting film to develop.
And the weirdest part, and I hope I'm not giving anything away if I reveal that, but it's been in all the newspapers, he's not in prison. He lives on a $65 million settlement with his family.
Yeah, I mean, all of that stuff is true. However, it's all the beginning of another story. Every time I investigate any aspect of this man's story, I learn more about what really happened. And so, you know, the $65 million story is a story that's been told a million times. People say, well, he gets out of his indictment. Essentially, he was indicted for the murder of this man in Texas,
Morris Black,
and ultimately he's acquitted on that charge. And now goes free, has spent a little bit of time in jail, and shortly after that happens, makes a settlement with his family for $65 million. So if you spend about 2 minutes on the story, you say, oh, I see. So the family was trying to get rid of Bob, and they gave him this money, and he went away. Turns out the story is actually a lot more complicated. Bob is the one that actually sued his family at that point because there were issues about family trusts and so on. You know, each one of these things could be a movie, truly. I mean, he has had an extraordinary life, and he is a person with logic and humanity. And, you know, people are very quick to point fingers. And I also think it's important to at least understand who this person is, even if you don't like some of his choices.
My guests are Andrew Jarecki, the director of All Good Things, which opens this Friday at the Paris Theater and the Angelica, starring Ryan Gosling, Frank Langella, and my other guest, Kirsten Dunst. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Kirsten Dunst, who is one of the stars of a new film, along with Ryan Gosling and Frank Langella, called All Good Things. And also with us is Andrew Jarecki, the director of the film. And Kirsten, were you and Ryan Gosling concerned about the constraints of having to impersonate real people?
I didn't feel like I was impersonating someone at all. I just had to be truthful and in my relationship with him and build it in a way so you really believe that these two people are in love and why she would have stayed as long as she did and what excuses, what, you know, there the love had to be there in order to for her to not be a victim. And
I mean, at the beginning, they have what seems to be a rather wonderful relationship, but then alarms start going off, and some people, well, she is alarmed, but
she's
she
alarmed.
Doesn't leave.
She doesn't leave. And I think the decision she makes, she's thinking about a bigger picture just than, you know, this moment or that moment. You know, there's some abuse, but I think, you know, when that happens, she just has to like suck it up because if she's going to get a divorce, she has to do this. I mean, there's a lot of thinking about it wasn't an easy situation to leave, I don't think, at all.
Mr. Durst's younger brother, Douglas, contends that the film maligns the family's real estate company, the Durst Organization, which he now runs, and his dead father, Seymour Durst, the patriarch who's played by Frank Langella. He says it's defamatory, and there was an article in The Observer that pointed out that, contrary to what's depicted in the film, the Durst sold the Luxor before it was turned into a massage parlor. They never owned the Avon Porn Theater. Was that a concern for you when you were putting this together?
Well, I guess, first of all, of course the film is not defamatory. We were extremely methodical in our research, and I think that the statements that they made, both in their letters to the many people who have worked on the film, all of whom have received threatening letters from the Dursts.
You received a threatening letter, Chris?
Not me.
Well, the agencies received them on behalf of the talent and so on, but CAA got one. And
you'll never get another film role after this movie.
Yeah, but I think I think a lot of the things that they say even now may be things that they believe, and it might be useful for us to show them copies of the New York Times articles from that day and age when it turned out that the Durst family did own the Luxor, and that when the mayor figured that out, he kicked Seymour Durst off of the Blue Ribbon panel to clean up Times Square because it was clear that he was the largest landlord to the pornography business in Times Square. These things are documented. And at the same time, that wasn't the point of the film. So what was most remarkable to me, and I think is most relevant for Kirsten's character, is that we felt a tremendous affinity for Kathy Durst, for the girl who disappeared. She's at the core of our story. Kirsten is the person we care most about because she's bringing this girl to our view in the movie. And in an 8-page legal letter from the Durst Organization complaining about the accuracy in the film, they never mention this missing girl even once. It's an irrelevancy. What they do talk about is that they're upset because the film could be negative to their real estate business. It's all about square footage. It's not about the human beings that were influenced by this.
In her most recent film, Anne Hathaway has a nude scene, and there's a very brief scene in this film in which you appear topless. But it seems to have received an inordinate amount of attention in the press, both of those. Do you think that we'll ever, as a society, get past that?
I think that it's interesting because it's the first time, or, I feel like it's the easiest thing. It's gossipy. I think that's what most websites and things, they go for, the quick line that will get someone to click the article. So,
well, if it sells tickets.
It's pretty, yeah, if it sells tickets, great.
I want to say something just kind of like in the casual nature of this show, which I like a lot. So I'll just say something that I haven't thought about saying, but it bothered me. There's an article on the Fox website that came out a couple of days ago that says something about Kirsten Dunst forgets she did racy sex scene with Ryan Gosling. And there's a whole article that sort of makes it seem like, Kirsten as a member of this Hollywood community of people who have no morals, she's done so many nude scenes, she can't even remember what she's done. That is so incredibly wrong. A, it's factually wrong. She's actually never done that in a film. She does it very minimally in this film and in a very tasteful way. But to see this film and to take away from it the idea, to somehow turn that element of it into not only the most important thing, but to use it to cast aspersions on, somebody who's worked incredibly hard in her career to develop a real reputation for doing great quality work is just sort of like, that's the same kind of person that's writing, sees the movie and then writes an article about who's topless.
But you did get to kiss Brad Pitt when you were just 12 years old in Interview with the Vampire.
More of the same. No.
You have been in the public eye for a long time, and you once said that you tend to read articles in magazines about you and can't avoid knowing what's being written in the tabloids. Does it really get to you?
I mean,
is it possible to have privacy?
I think it's best to not, go online and look up anything, but I think it's humanly impossible as well. You have a film coming out. You want to know what people are saying about it.
Well, you have been cutting back in recent years, but you seem to be now once again very busy. You have this film. There's Melancholia.
Yes.
When will that be released?
Next year sometime, I think.
You co-star with Kiefer Sutherland. It's by the controversial director Lars von Trier. And I hope that your character comes out of it in better shape than Charlotte Gainsbourg or Willem Dafoe did in Lars von Trier's Antichrist.
I do.
Oh, good. Well, I was worried about you.
Yeah, no.
And then also Upside Down. And then you also are in the film adaptation to On the Road.
Yeah, I'm filming that right now.
Oh, so you're busy again?
I took some time off, but also was reading scripts and not, responding to anything. So I did Upside Down, which was kind of fun and romantic. And then I found out about Lars's film, and that was really exciting and a way of working that I hadn't experienced again. And then On the Road's a smaller part. So,
but are you at a point now where you can just pick and choose what's offered to you?
Yeah, usually that's how it works. Sometimes for certain roles, people audition and things, but usually it's awaiting, reading, researching.
When you sold Movie Phone, Andrew, the ticketing
dated
site.
Dated yourself.
Was it your intention to direct feature films or to write music?
I don't know if either of those was my intention, but I went to Princeton. I graduated and was had done a lot of theater, and it was my original intention to go to Yale Drama School for directing. And then my father put a lot of I think he came to visit me at college, and he said, I'm hearing about this plan for you to go and direct things, and let me tell you how that really works. And then he told me these sort of horror stories about how, people that do artistic things are always getting manipulated and bamboozled by the money people. And he said, well, maybe you want to join our family business, learn a little something. And so I did agree to do that for a period of time, and then that sort of morphed into Movie Phone. I ended up sort of coming up with that idea, and then but I had always done artistic things, and even when I just started Movie Phone, I had made a short film that was at Sundance. And so when I sold the business, I just sort of got back into it fairly quickly.
And then you wrote music for Felicity.
Yeah, I did that with
J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. And J.J. and I do music a lot, and he's a super talented, not just person, but particularly talented musician. I think people don't necessarily think of that first, but we do write music together a lot. I like that a lot.
And then there was Capturing the Friedmans, and this thing has kept you occupied for a long time.
Yeah.
Did your father warn you that there might be some brothers named Weinstein?
Yeah, we all know the Weinsteins because we live in New York, and I've known Harvey for a long time. But, we actually, things worked out with them, too. I mean, this movie has persisted despite all the changes. If you think about when we first started making this movie, the 7 or 8 companies that were interested in financing the movie, I think 6 or 7 of them are gone now. There's so many of those independent film companies don't even exist. So, it's a nice thing that the Weinsteins are still around and still helping people make decent movies.
At one point, wasn't Ryan outfitted with a prosthetic nose to make him look more like Robert Durst?
Yeah, we played around with that. There was a sense that sometimes, like you saw with Nicole Kidman in The Hours or something, if you make a small change in someone's physical appearance, it can help with the character. But that was right around the time we were sort of talking about whether he was trying to be closer to the real Robert Durst, or he was just trying to make it real for himself. And I think in the end, he made a really good series of choices, and we didn't decide to use that kind of pretense. But also, he becomes very, very old in the movie. I don't know, let's say he's in his late 50s and early 60s. And we used a kind of aging that is very seldom been used. It's very new technology, and I don't think it's distracting. But that was to take Ryan into the future. Kirsten is the only person really in the movie that doesn't age very much.
Well, you age about 5 years, 6 years, don't you?
Yeah, a little more.
But it's more
years.
The emotional weight that ages me, I think, in this movie.
Because you've always had an incredible talent for inhabiting people from a different time, like the Cat's Meow as Marion Davis. There's something about you that reminds people of the movie stars of the past.
Thank you very much.
Look at her amazing hairstyle right now. Isn't that an interesting thing? She's got a very like Lana Turner thing happening.
I had satellite radio all day today. So, satellite, video.
It must be fun working with somebody like Ryan Gosling, who is just such a brilliant actor. Does that bring out the best in the person who's in those scenes with them?
I think whenever you get two actors that are willing to be vulnerable with each other and honest, the best comes of that. I think you have to have a teammate to accomplish with that, though.
Hmm. Well,
I'll tell you, there was one very interesting moment between the two of them. I remember we were shooting in the kitchen at this house, and there was a scene where he tells her something that's not true, and she has a reaction to it. And we had rehearsed the scene a number of times, and we played it fairly straight, and it was kind of in the script that way. And we went to rehearse it again right before we shot it, and Ryan changed it up completely and started doing it in a way that was almost like he was almost laughing. And it was really different in every way from what I had seen and I think what Kirsten and he had done before. And I watched her when he did this, and she had this look on her face that was kind of, you know, looked a little puzzled for a second. And then we said, all right, well, let's break up and we'll get back together when we're ready. And she went into the other room and sat down on the bed and put her iPod on and started listening to some music, which she often does when she's kind of to herself between scenes. And I thought, oh, no, this is going to be a problem. She's got to be upset. He's definitely messing around with this scene in a way that, I don't know, it's interesting. Let me find out. And I went and I talked to Ryan. And he said, you know, I know it's different, but let me do this. I think she's going to do something really interesting with it, which I thought was a generous thing to say. And then I thought, I wonder if Kirsten agrees with this. Let me not interfere. I said, all right, we'll try it. And I go in the other room and I sat down next to her and she took her headphones off for a second. And she just looked at me and had this little smile on her face. And she said, this scene just got really interesting.
Are you going to be making more feature films? Are you going to go back to documentaries?
It depends on what Kirsten wants to do. I don't know. Yeah, you know, I'm always interested in whatever the next thing is. I try not to make it too doctrinal.
Kirsten, have you seen the new musical based on Spider-Man yet?
No. Did it open already?
Well, they're doing previews now.
Oh,
they're
okay.
Hoping to get the machinery going.
Oh, well, yeah, I'll definitely go see it when I'm back in
New
York.
That's funny. Can you imagine if you're sitting next to her in the audience, what you get to go tell your friends in Iowa?
Yes.
I want to thank you both so much for being on our show. Nanda Jarecki, director of All Good Things, which opens this Friday at the Paris Theater in the Angelica, starring Ryan Gosling, Frank Langella, Lily Rabe, Philip Baker Hall, Nick Offerman, Kristen Wiig, and, of course, Kirsten Dunst. Thank you so much, Kirsten, for
thank
being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.